a little meteorological rain coming up in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the mild Minneapolis climes, at the moment, this is the January 27th Rain Report. I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY. The U.S. Amateur Radio Service has had an ongoing partnership with the National Weather Service for years. But just how does the modern radio amateur interact with the 192 weather offices nationwide? This week, we present some of those answers in an excerpt from Brandon Palquin, an employee in the Wilmington, Ohio, National Weather Service office. Palquin spoke at the 2017 Dayton Hamvention.
The National Weather Service, what's our mission? Our mission is to protect lives and property. And the way we protect lives and property is through the issuance of our forecasts, our watches, our warnings and advisories. Because those watches, warnings and advisories alerts you all, the public, that hazardous weather is coming your way. And we are a federal agency. We are part of the Department of Commerce, or the DOC, and under the DOC, there's a lot of different agencies. NOAA is one of those. That's the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and the Weather Service is part of that. Underneath the Weather Service, we have 122 separate weather forecast offices across the country. And all these different weather forecast offices, we're all doing a lot of the same things. We're all issuing seven-day forecasts, and we're all issuing watches and warnings and advisories and statements for our areas of responsibility. Well, the weather never stops, so neither do we, so weather forecast offices are staffed around the clock. We work rotating shifts. We'll have people on a day shift, people on an evening shift, people on a midnight shift as well, always working and always issuing those routine products and always having our weather watch in place monitoring for hazardous weather. This is the Wilmington, Ohio forecast area. We're responsible for 52 counties and 3 states. We're responsible for the weather in central and southwest Ohio, southeast Indiana, and northern Kentucky as well. And a little history. Some of you may know that back in the 90s, the early to mid-90s, the Weather Service was modernized. So you had a lot of these little offices that combined into bigger, full-fledged weather forecast offices. And in this area, we had offices in Columbus and Dayton and Cincinnati, and those offices combined to what is the modern-day Wilmington Weather Forecast Office. And this transition from the smaller Weather Service offices to the larger weather forecast offices certainly took time for all the offices across the country. For Wilmington, this took several years. Cincinnati closed in 1994. Dayton closed in 95, and then finally the Columbus office there closed in 1996, and it was at that point in time that all of the responsibilities for our 52 counties were transferred to the office in Wilmington, Ohio. Like many offices across the country, we've got about 25 employees. A lot of those are meteorologists, but we have other employees as well. For example, we've got electronics people. They maintain the equipment and repair the equipment that houses our office, and also some of the equipment is actually outside of our office. So we've got electronics people and computer people and also administrative support staff as well. So while about 15 of those 25 are meteorologists, and we have a hydrologist as well, we've got some other support staff that helps us accomplish our mission. On a routine type of day, we've got about 2 to 4 people on staff conducting those routine duties, our daily business. We've got different duties. We've got one desk here, which is just looking at the aviation forecast. We issue aviation-specific forecasts for 6 different sites, including Dayton. A lot of the other weather forecast offices do the same thing. They're called TAFs. They're Terminal Aerodrome Forecasts, and that desk is really focusing on that aviation component. We've also got more routine forecast desks, like the short-term forecast desk over here, looking for weather conditions for the first 36 or so hours. And we've got a long-term forecast desk behind there, too, looking at 36 hours all the way out to day 7 of the forecast. Got a public service unit person here as well. That's the person who launches that weather balloon twice a day, and that's that first line of defense to pick up that phone. So if you're a spotter and you're calling in a severe weather report, that desk is probably the primary person that's going to take that report and relay it to other people in the office. Here's what operations might look like on a severe weather type of day, maybe an outbreak type of day. So 2 to 4 can easily become 8 to 10 or even more. And that's where people are staying late beyond their normal shift. Or maybe people are being called in on overtime to help out because we've got the routine duties we need to do, right? That 7-day forecast, those aviation forecasts. But we have non-routine functions as well, issuing those watches, those warnings, and those statements. And it takes extra people to focus in on those more specific duties. Routine duties like aviation and the forecast desk as well. There's that public service unit, at least one. Maybe we need two during severe weather. But back there along the wall in Wilmington, those desks serve as our radar operating desks. So we've got dedicated people to watching those storms on the radar and issuing those severe thunderstorm warnings and those tornado warnings. And if hydrology is a threat, we might have an entirely separate person dedicated to issuing flash flood warnings and flood warnings and flood advisories as well, because flooding itself can be its own job. You don't want one person looking at tornadoes and hail and wind and flooding. You want to kind of divvy up the duties a little bit. Might have multiple radar operators, and then in the center there too, we'll have a storm coordinator person just to kind of oversee all the operations and making sure that everyone has all the resources that they need to do their specific job. The Weather Service loves its acronyms, and AWIPS is just one of thousands of acronyms we have. AWIPS is our computer system that we use to look at all the data and to make the forecast. And AWIPS stands for Advanced Weather Interactive Processing System, and it was recently upgraded, so this is the second version of that. And we can look at everything that we need to do to analyze the weather, but also issue watches and warnings and statements to make sure that they get out to you in a timely fashion. What's some of the data that we're looking at? Well, we're looking at upper air data. We send up a balloon a couple of times a day, and it transfers data back to us. We can look at what's called a SKU-T, a trace of temperature and dew point and precipitation, and that data is really important. Through AWIPS, we look at radar data, too, and we can dissect the structure of storms, which helps us issue those warnings. And there are different surface observing stations that we look at as well, and we can display all those stations on our AWIPS, and we can even overlay radar or satellite data there on top of the surface observations, so we can see multiple sources of data on one screen, and that's really helpful for us. Upper air. How many people have actually seen an upper air launch before? You know, it's a pretty neat thing. If you're interested in seeing one, contact your local Weather Service office and ask for a tour. Many offices do provide tours, maybe not so much in the summertime, but especially in the fall time when the weather is usually quieter. And if you come in the evening hours, you can see that balloon go up. Not every office has an upper air program, but a lot of them do across the country. There's 92. And all those offices are launching balloons at the same time, one in the morning and one in the evening as well. Those balloons have a sensor package attached to them. It's called a radiosonde. And that radiosonde has sensors for pressure and temperature and humidity and wind. And all that data gets transferred back to our office. That balloon probably goes up 80, 90, 100,000 feet, and we can see how the data changes, how the temperature changes, the pressure changes, how the wind changes as that balloon goes up in the atmosphere.
You're listening to a talk about the partnership between Amateur Radio and the National Weather Service, presented at the 2017 Dayton Hamvention by Brandon Palquin, an employee in the Wilmington, Ohio National Weather Service office. We'll conclude our excerpts from Brandon Palquin's talk in a moment. This is the Rain Report, which generally updates Saturdays on therainreport.com and heard Saturday evenings on WTWW 5085 kHz from Lebanon, Tennessee. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
Here's a Doppler radar image. That's inside that white-looking soccer ball that you probably see on the outside as you drive past a Doppler radar, and it helps us interrogate the storms. We've got reflectivity up there on the top right, and then we've got velocity there on the bottom right. And the radar works by sending out a pulse of energy outward in the atmosphere, and that pulse of energy comes into contact with different targets. Snowflakes, could be raindrops, could be hailstones. And a large percentage of that energy is reflected back to the radar. And that reflected energy back to the radar, that's called reflectivity. And that's the yellows and oranges and reds that you're seeing on a radar image. That's the power reflected back to our radar. And usually the brighter colors mean a stronger storm or heavier precipitation has fallen, maybe even hail fallen out of a storm. And we can see velocity too. And velocity is really important because it helps us gauge what kind of winds might be coming out of those storms. And velocity helps us see rotation too. So if we see strong rotation on our radar, that might prompt us to issue a tornado warning. And how do we issue those tornado warnings? We've got a program called WarnGen. So what we do is draw these boxes around the storms where we think the severe weather is most likely to be. They're called polygons. You see the polygons that we actually draw on our computer screen right here when we issue tornado warnings and severe thunderstorm warnings and flash flood warnings. One point I always make, whenever I go out and talk to people, it doesn't matter what kind of talk it is. It could be a spotter talk, could be a partner visit, could be something like this. We encourage everyone to have multiple ways to receive warnings from the National Weather Service. That redundancy is so important because what if you only depend on one way and that one way fails? What's going to alert you that a tornado warning is in effect? So I want to encourage everyone to have multiple ways to receive warnings from the Weather Service. No Weather Radio is a great way. How many people have a No Weather Radio? It can be a lifesaver. It'll wake you up at 2 in the morning if a tornado warning is issued. What else is going to wake you up at 2 in the morning if you're fast asleep and a tornado warning is issued? Wireless emergency alerts. You have a smartphone. Tornado warnings and flash flood warnings will come through on your mobile device there. That could be a lifesaver too. Obviously, local officials maintain sirens in a lot of the counties that are meant to alert you if you're outdoors. They're not meant to be heard on the inside, so don't depend on sirens. If you're on the inside, you want to have one of these other methods to alert you to warnings. And I bet a lot of you are really good at situational awareness. That is staying alert to what the latest forecast is, if there's the chance for severe weather. And if a watch is issued by the National Weather Service, a lot of ways to keeping up to date with the latest forecast, watches, warnings, and statements from the National Weather Service. This is the Wilmington National Weather Service website. All the Weather Service websites are structured in a similar way. Go to the front page and click on where you're interested in. And if there's a hazardous weather outlook in effect, alerting you to hazardous weather, all you need to do is click on that and you'll receive more information in that hazardous weather outlook product. Now, what about storm reports? Storm reports are so important to the Weather Service because we couldn't do what we do without Doppler radar, but that Doppler radar, it doesn't really see at the ground. It's got a beam that shoots out, and it sees a storm, you know, above the ground. We want to know what's happening at the ground where people are living and breathing. And to do that, we need reports from our spotters and amateur radio folks who relay those reports to us at the National Weather Service. That ground truth is such a critical, critical component for us. And it comes through a lot of sources. Spotters, amateur radio, they're the top two. And we've got other sources too. Our EMA partners, the general public, the media, different chat rooms, social media like Facebook and Twitter as well. They're all sources for us to get that ground truth that we can actually put in our warnings and statements to let people know, listen, this isn't just Doppler radar saying there could be something bad happening. We know from one of these sources that something bad is happening, and hopefully that'll prompt people to take cover and take shelter in hazardous weather situations.
You're listening to a talk about the partnership between amateur radio and the National Weather Service, presented at the 2017 Dayton Hamvention by Brandon Palquin, an employee in the Wilmington, Ohio National Weather Service office. We'll conclude our excerpts from Brandon Palquin's talk in a moment.
The flow of information is critical. So we've activated our network, right? We've got someone in our Wilmington office listening. Who's he listening to? Well, he's listening to all the amateur radio operators, in particular our section nets. This is the Columbus section net listening to talk throughout all the counties in central Ohio. And he acquires reports, right? And he relays those reports to Wilmington there. And this gentleman right there writes it down, gets up and walks over to our radar operators and provides them with that report. So it's a very well-orchestrated type of system. A lot of offices are structured very similarly, where amateur radio is allowing the Weather Service to acquire very timely reports when we're in severe weather mode or warning mode. That information sharing is so critical. It's all about all of us working together to try to save lives. We're a mission of the National Weather Service, protection of life and property. We do that through watches and warnings. And in this example here, Well, our spotters and our amateur radio folks made sure that reports were funneled in to the radar meteorologist. And that radar meteorologist, because of those reports, issued a warning. And that warning went out through a lot of ways. No weather radio's going off. And in this example, the kids in a school, they took shelter because that warning was issued. But that warning might not have been issued if it wasn't for all that ground truth, those spotter reports that were relayed to us at the National Weather Service. What are we looking for at the National Weather Service? Well, at Wilmington, when I go out and conduct spotter training classes, same in a lot of offices, obviously we want to know where you're at. We want to know the location of the event and the time of the event, too, to the nearest minute. And what kind of events are we looking for? We want to know about tornadoes and funnel clouds and really any cloud that is showing rotation. We want to know about that. We want to know about hail that's large, maybe a half of an inch or larger. Any damage associated with winds, like trees coming down or large tree branches being knocked down from healthy trees. Any flood-related damage, too. Maybe rushing water, a sign that a flash flood is occurring. You hear about swift water rescues. We want to know about that. That's important information for us to have as well. You usually don't want to hear about lightning, though, because by definition, every thunderstorm has lightning. In most cases, don't want to hear about lightning unless there's a fatality, which we do need to report for our purposes. But all those white things there, those are important things that relate to the warnings and the statements and the advisories that we issue. And we, like most offices across the country, want to hear about that stuff. Here's hail. Don't report hail as marbles, because marbles come in a lot of different sizes, right? We don't know if a marble is severe or non-severe. So if you can, relate the size of hail to coins are really good. Pennies, nickels, dimes, quarters. You run out of your currency, and then you can relate hail to ping pong balls or golf balls or even grapefruit size hail or softball size hail as well. And wind, if you got your own equipment, how can I share my data with the Weather Service? And you can do that through the Citizen Weather Observer program. But most of us don't have our own equipment. Wind speeds are very difficult to estimate. So what we tell people to do is just tell us the damage you have. Tell us that 5-inch diameter tree limbs were knocked down. Just tell us what you observe, because we can relate that to how strong the winds might have been. How do you report? Well, pictures are great. If you have pictures or videos to share with us, please do that through social media or through office email. But first, make sure we get that timely report by one of two means, either calling an office's spotter line, calling the office directly to tell them what your report is, or relay through amateur radio. It's another timely way for reports to funnel into the National Weather Service forecast offices. Use one of those two ways first for severe weather situations. And then if you have pictures, then share those with us. That could be useful information. But we might not be monitoring our email or social media quite as frequently as we would like to during an active severe weather situation. Minutes can be critical. So relay that urgent report first through one of those top start methods before you share a picture with us. And some of you may be familiar with the initiative of the National Weather Service to build a weather-ready nation. Weather-ready nation is one that is ready to deal with hazardous weather and can respond to and be resilient to hazardous weather as well. We can't do it alone at the Weather Service. We need our partners to help us. And one of our core partners, it's the amateur radio community, and you already do that through relaying spotter reports to us during severe weather situations. And if you've got an amateur radio group, then that group can become what's called a Weather Ready Nation ambassador. As an ambassador, you're helping us get the word out about hazardous weather, weather safety, and weather preparedness. There's a website down here. You can also do an internet search, Weather Ready Nation ambassador. It's not for individual families, but it's for groups and organizations. So if you're part of an amateur radio group or the president of an amateur radio group, you might want to consider becoming a Weather Ready Nation ambassador if you haven't already done so.
And that concludes our excerpt from a 2017 Dayton Hamvention talk given by Brandon Palquin, an employee in the National Weather Service Wilmington, Ohio office. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2018 Rain. All rights are reserved. Now for those storm chasers among you, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, bidding you a very 73. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, accessible via therainreport.com and heard on the amateur radio programming block Saturday nights on WTWW 5085 kHz from Lebanon, Tennessee. I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY. Keep on hamming.